This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Good afternoon and welcome to Health and Living. I'm Lee Chui Lin. Today is World Mental Health Day, and it's fitting therefore to look at one of the most common mental health conditions that afflict us worldwide and here in Malaysia. Depression. Explaining the condition as well as the new approaches available are Associate Professor Dr. Philip George, consultant psychiatrist and addiction specialist, Sherman Ng, who's a psychotherapist, and Lin Wong. Welcome to the show.
Well, thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
So firstly, what is World Mental Health Day?
Well, World Mental Health Day was coined by the World Health Organization in an attempt to try and address the stigmatization, discrimination against mental health problems. And so it's bringing out to the public issues about mental health that they need to know and to improve literacy among the general public.
And does 2013 have a particular theme?
Yes, it does. The theme for this year is mental health of the older adult, and it's specifically looking at older people above the age of 60.
Right. But having said that, today we're here to talk about depression. What's the importance of raising awareness of depression?
Well, one of the things that we do know in older people is that depression is the most common disorder. So I think it's appropriate that we actually speak about depression today as well. Mm-hmm. Depression is also the fourth most disabling illness in the world. Well, that might sound a surprise, but if you compare about 300 different illnesses that people are afflicted with, like heart disease and, you know, road traffic accidents and everything else, depression actually stands out as the fourth most disabling illness.
Can we talk about that term, disabling? When we use it in this context, what do we mean?
Well, a lot of people used to look at, you know, illnesses that cause death and mortality, yeah. But they never looked at the burden of disease. If somebody's sick, like if you have a flu and you can't get to work, you don't make money for a few days, you can't do the work around the house, now that's a burden. And that's what they looked at different diseases. If people suffer from depression, they lose years and years of their life because of the disease.
Lin, I understand that you have experienced living with depression. Could you share your story with us?
Yeah, I believe that I must have been depressed for a while, and it didn't really like happen just overnight. I think progressively it was getting worse. I didn't realize it because I don't know the symptom. I wasn't aware that I was depressed. But then again, a recent personal tragedy actually happened. I lost my husband 2 years ago, and I believe that was that moment where it really hit me. I literally could not function. I was doing really badly at work, and when a depressed person say when they can't get out of bed, it actually means literally can't get out of bed. And that was the time. There has been times where I literally couldn't get out of bed, and I didn't know what it was. Then of course, my boss back then could see that I was depressed and actually diagnosed me, because he was a medical doctor, and he diagnosed me as depressed and really asked me to go seek help. And that was the start of coming in terms with the fact that you're depressed. And it is really shocking.
I think one of the things about depression is, it's often said that the thing about depression is that it's not something you can see, it's not a literal loss. It's not something that's written all over you. So I guess in a sense, you were fortunate to have a boss who could see, you know, what was happening with you.
He could see from the work that I was doing. He could see the level of productivity that I was putting in. And it's a bit of a pill to actually having to face up to it, because it's like, you know, I was always very active. I'm always a go-getter. And all of a sudden, you see yourself slipping away and you don't know what it is. It took someone from the outside to actually say, you know, you really need to get yourself checked out.
Were the other people in your life understanding and supportive of what you were going through?
The problem is, after getting diagnosed, I was so shocked and I couldn't talk to anyone about it. I was ashamed because, well, you hear about it, that, you know, but you just don't think it will happen to you. I think this is just one of those kind of a disease where you wouldn't never really know till it inflict you. And so, no, I didn't say anything. But after a while, I realized I need to open up a little bit more. My family members weren't really very supportive because they didn't think that it was a problem.
I think it's something I've heard a lot, you know. Mm. It's that notion of if you're sad, why can't you just be happier?
Yeah. Exactly. So I think it's not about, okay, so you're just feeling down, just go walk. No, it doesn't work that way. Not when you're clinically depressed, you know.
I think the other thing that happens also is people who do get depressed don't, you know, one day feel happy and the next day suddenly feel depressed. So it sort of creeps up on them. Mm-hmm. And a lot of others around them think that it's just part of their personality. That they were these sort of people before and now they're this sort of people.
Yeah.
So we have to adjust. And that's not true because it's actually an illness.
Mm. And both, you know, Dr. Philip and Sherman, who are the people who generally come to see you seeking depression? Is it a diagnosis that you make and then you proceed with treatment? Or when people come to see you, they usually understand that there is something going on that needs addressing?
Well, for me, because I'm a therapist, I don't diagnose a patient. So most of the time, they've really gone to see a psychiatrist or a doctor, and they've really got some information about their condition, if you like. For most of them, the people that I see have been suffering for quite a long time, and they've taken all sorts of measures to take care of themselves, particularly medication as a first port of call, I guess. Therapy is kind of like a last resort because it requires more work. So for most people, I say that they already know that they have a condition, but the saddest thing for me is when I see them, they don't really know exactly how they developed the condition themselves. They don't have a lot of information about where it started, how it got sort of so bad. And it just, as we talked about, it creeps up on them, and then one day you just don't get out of bed. How did you become this very productive person to a person that's completely shattered, you know? So that's the sad thing, yeah.
Yeah, and actually with in psychiatry, we have manuals or diagnostic classifications to help
the
us
the DSM
decide.
And yeah.
Yes, the DSM. The DSM-5 has just been launched.
Yes.
But these are actually manuals that help to come to a diagnosis. Mm. It's similar to somebody having migraine. You can't do a CT scan and say, oh, you've got a migraine. You have to go according to a certain number of symptoms for a certain period of time, and then you decide, yes, this is migraine, because 98% of the time people who have these symptoms suffer migraine. Mm. And that's how we decide a diagnosis in psychiatry. And so with depression, it's 5 out of 9 symptoms, and they have to have it for at least 2 weeks.
Right, which leads me to my next question. How does it differ from merely feeling down or feeling blue? Because I think, you know, most of us will have periods in our lives where we're sad, or whether it's because of loss or because of stress or whatever else, you know, it happens. But how does it differ? Is that where the 2 weeks comes in?
Yes. Well, among the 9 symptoms includes 2 crucial core symptoms. And the first is a low mood. Or depressed mood, which lasts continuously for 2 weeks. And the second is anhedonia, which is the lack of pleasure from pleasurable activities. So people who love to go and see movies, they may still, you know, get coaxed to go and see a movie, but they don't get the pleasure that they used to have when they used to see these movies before. So those 2 core features are important. And then you have another 3 or more symptoms from the other list. And so people with normal sadness cannot maintain these symptoms for that long a period.
Does it come down to... I've read that it's got something to do with brain chemistry as much as anything else. Could you share a little bit more about that?
Absolutely. I mean, there are biopsychosocial factors that are related to why people develop depression. And the biological factors include neurochemical changes in the brain. There are neurochemicals that decide how you perceive things. For example, you look at someone and you say, do I have to feel angry with this person? Do I feel sad? Or do I feel happy when I meet this person? And all that's determined by messages that are sent by neurochemicals in a part of the brain. And those neurochemicals, just like any other part of your body, can get diseased. And that often happens when you've been exposed to excessive stress or, you know, long-standing stress, and eventually those neurochemicals don't work as how they used to before.
And that's where medication could come in.
Yes.
Okay. We'll address that further in the second half of the show. I'm speaking to Associate Professor Dr. Philip George, who is a consultant psychiatrist and addiction specialist, Sherman Ng, who is a psychotherapist, and Lin Wong, who's had personal experience with depression. It is World Mental Health Day 2013. If you have any questions, do send them in. You can text us 016-201-9000 or tweet BFM Radio.
This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Good afternoon and welcome back to The Bigger Picture. I'm Lee Chui-Lin. Sitting in the studio with me today is Associate Professor Dr. Philip George, who is a consultant psychiatrist and addiction specialist, Sherman Ng, who's a psychotherapist, and Lin Wong, who's had personal experience with depression. We are talking about depression today because it is World Mental Health Day 2013. So we've established what the key symptoms of depression are, how you diagnose it and so on. Lin, earlier you mentioned that it was partly brought on because you experienced quite a great loss. Mm-hmm. Which, you know, how often is depression precipitated by these sorts of major life events? You know, loss of a loved one, breakdown of a major romantic relationship, that sort of thing?
It used to be thought that depression was, there were two types. There was a reactive depression and there was an endogenous depression. And reactive depression was in people who had a stressor or event happen and then they developed depression. And it was very different from those who maybe developed depression out of nowhere. But we know now that there is no distinction, that generally depression is a combination of reaction and people who may be vulnerable, either through genetics, either through neurochemical changes, either through stress in their childhood and events that they've experienced when they were younger as well.
What do we know for sure about the genetic links between depression? Because I was reading an article by a woman who basically said that she's considering not having children because she's so worried that they will live with depression the way that she has.
Well, with depression, the general population risk is about 1 in 10. So 1 in 10 people can develop depression. But if you have a parent who has depression, that increases. And that goes up to maybe about 20%. So the risk does increase, but there are ways to prevent that from happening. It's not 100%, so it's not true that every child that you may have will develop depression if you have depression, and you can prevent depression as well through other means.
For people who are around someone who they think is depressed, I suppose like yeah. Lynn's boss, you know, how can they get them the help they require? Because in that instance, that's a licensed medical professional. It's quite different. It's quite different from possibly a parent or a spouse who's just looking at their family member and thinking, I'm worried about you. You know, so what are the steps you might need to take to start getting somebody the help?
Well, from my experience, when I treat a patient, I actually get the family together as well as a part of the process, assuming they're willing to listen, if you like. Because a big part of the lack of understanding is a refusal to even accept the possibility that depression is in their family. Nobody prepares for their child to be depressed or inflicted by any sort of mental disorder, but it happens. It happens so frequently now that it's quite scary. So the first step is to really, you know, get a good idea of what is actually involved in the process of recovery. Understand how it happens, and also give them a good understanding of that there is a cure for this. Mm-hmm. There is a process that can be reversed. It's not something that you get inflicted for the rest of your life if you seek the appropriate treatment for it. So, and if you explain the steps and you explain the process to them, they can participate in it together mm-hmm. as a family. It's not the case for a lot of families, but I feel that that's a very, very effective way to engage everybody into the process.
I think that the society in general still needs an acute amount of awareness that depression, it's not something to be ashamed of, that we can actually come right up and actually talk about it, as opposed to it being so stigmatized that no one wants to come out and talk about it. And because of that, the rising level of depression is going to go up because nobody even know that they are depressed. And on top of that, they don't want to talk about it and they don't want even to seek help. So when that happens, then what's going to happen to the nation? Mm-hmm. And I would say I'm like a survivor, to speak. I want to talk about it. I want to create this awareness because I think it's important that people, I'm sure there's a lot of people out there walking about not realizing that they're actually depressed, because it's not something you can see. It's how you feel, you know, it's literally how you feel on a day-to-day basis. And if you leave it, then it might take you to, you, it might take a big tragedy before you can actually wake up and realize that you're not well.
And for you, Lynn, what was the process like? What was the process of, you know, seeking help and then moving forward?
To hear my doctor tells me that I'm clinically depressed, that was a big shock. I think I went home and I actually had a big, big cry, because it was like, how could this happen to me? You know, I'm this really cheerful person, but at the same time, things were progressively going bad. But I think coming in terms with it is the first step, that you know that you have this condition and that you want to be willing to seek help. So with the help of my psychiatry, my doctor, and with the help of a psychotherapist, it has been a journey of discovery. It was a lot of healing was done, and I think it's a revelation, you know. But I think what Sherman said was really true. We want to know, why are we depressed? What caused this? And I think the medical fraternity doesn't really able to pinpoint exactly what causes it. And I don't think we even, some of them don't even want to know what causes it. They just want to get well. Like in my case, by the time I got diagnosed, I really don't want to know what causes it, because it has been so depleting. I just want to know, when am I going to get well, and how will I get well, and how soon can I get well, because it was really depleting, you know.
And Sherman, you know, you were talking about how family and friends, family in particular, need to play a role in therapy that you provide. Overall, you know, for the three of you, would you say then, that what kind of support do family and friends need to provide?
I think it's imperative, because if you're spending a lot of time with the people that you care about the most, they are really your number one people that, that you should rely on for that type of support. So a non-judgmental environment is very, very important. An environment that doesn't look at the person as a second-class citizen. And I think what Lynn said before is very true, that because we're talking about feelings, we seem to think that emotions and feelings seem to be a weakness for the human condition. So if we are sad, then we are bad. If we are angry, we're mad.
It's like we would all be so much better without feelings.
That's right, yeah. So that is actually one of the big issues about depression, is because we keep suppressing these feelings, these feelings that are not socially accepted in the public eye, as it were. So we keep burying them. And, you know, the deeper we bury them, the more we have to pay a cost for them later on, which is what essentially depression will cause, I mean, would be a symptom of, essentially. And then, of course, as Dr. George said, the chemicals in the brain can't handle these type of suppressed feelings anymore. Yep. So, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I think the important thing is that the general public should know that it's not a weakness.
Yeah.
Nobody decided that they suddenly want to become weak and be depressed. It's an illness just like a heart disease. You know, you can't will away your heart disease or go take a walk and get better from your heart disease. So neither can you do the same with depression. And I think it's really sad when families, you know, can't come to terms with this and tell them, snap out of it, you know, get back to yourself, do something like go for a jog, and they don't really realize that it's an illness.
And it's an illness that requires medical help as much as any other illness.
Well, I think it requires actually a complement of therapies. And that's why it's, you know, it's the biopsychosocial causes that need to be addressed in total, in holistic approach. And so, you know, doctors may actually look at medication, but Sherman and, you know, psychologists would work with psychotherapy. And I think that's where patients like Lynn recover completely.
So when should people go get help? I mean, we talked about the 2-week mark earlier, but then again, it's not something that you think to yourself. You know, you don't wake up in the morning and think, huh, I've been sad for 2 weeks. I should go seek help now. You know, so is it usually, is there a click in a person's mind to say, okay, perhaps I need to go talk to somebody? Or is it something that, again, you know, like in Lynn's story, an external person needed to point out?
Yeah, very often it's sort of identified that it needs to be addressed especially when it starts to interfere with day-to-day activities. And so when it's affecting work, when it's affecting relationships, when you're starting to feel like you're not interested in people or, you know, the day-to-day routines.
And isolation.
Yes. That's when you need to look for help.
And who should you start off, you know, to get started? Who should you go see?
Well, generally, it's either a psychologist or a psychiatrist. And either one would be the best starting point.
So do you have people very often, you know, just make appointments with you and say, I've been feeling depressed, I need to talk?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. And
that's great to hear.
Well, based on the statistics, I think more people should come and see us because it's still a stigma. It's still a problem. You gotta decide to see someone. You gotta make an appointment. You gotta pick up the phone. You gotta pay some money. You gotta come. So these are all the obstacles before you even get to someone to talk about this.
I think the Caucasians come first before the Malaysians.
It's true.
That's true.
It's true because there's just too many obstacles in the mind to come and talk to someone about this. But we do get them, and I think the awareness is getting better. It can be improved, obviously, but people like Lynn are coming out to talk about this. And this is what we're doing today, is to help people understand that this is not a matter which should be buried. It should be talked about. A problem shared is a problem halved. And I think it's important to offload, get some perspective, get some help, and find out what you can do about it, I think.
Considering we're looking at, 1 in 10?
Yes.
What is the societal cost of clinical depression? Because if you imagine 10% of us essentially are walking around potentially depressed.
Yeah. Well, there are direct costs and there are indirect costs. And there are several studies that have been done, not much locally, but throughout the world, that billions and billions have been spent in terms of direct costs. And indirect costs can be, absence from work, effects on family, family having to take over roles and responsibilities that the sufferer can't actually do. And so those indirect costs have not actually been calculated. But it's enormous. It's huge.
What are the different types of depression? Because so far we've been using the term depression quite freely. But are there different types?
Well, the word depression itself is not in the DSM-5 or the classification. It's actually termed as major depression. And the main reason for that is because it's to differentiate the word that we use so commonly in our day-to-day language. We say Monday's a depressing day, I've got a depressed fracture on my skull, or, we've used it in so many different ways. The economy's depressed and da-da-da. So anyway, major depression is then divided into mild, moderate, and severe. And in mild, it may not interfere too much with your day-to-day life, but it's in the background. It's like you just feel a gloom throughout, complete, for days and days on end. Whereas in severe, they may have psychosis, or they may even have suicidal ideas.
And what's the difference between major and chronic depression? Is chronic another sort of standard?
Yes, there is another group of depression called dysthymia, which is a chronic depression. And that's a low-intensity depression which lasts for more than 2 years, with in-between periods of maybe 2 months of wellness. But in dysthymia, it may not be as burdensome as with major depression.
And something that you said earlier, Dr. Philip, is interesting, and I wanted to open it to all of you. Do we use the word depressed too lightly? Because, how do you feel about that? Because I think it's something that we hear a lot. Everybody uses the word. I guess it's the equivalent of saying I'm starving, and you're hardly starving. So is that a problem to be using that word too lightly, or is it, not a big deal?
I think that it is. It does to a certain extent. It actually has sort of dilute the severity of the actual medical condition of depression, because then it becomes so generic. So every little bit thing is depressing, but the actual fact is that depression has a medical implication, and because of the way it's being used, it really does dilute the impact of depression, especially to a patient. And I think that should be looked into by the very, I don't know, maybe the medical fraternity should be looking into this.
For you, was it an issue when you had to say it? When, you know, because hearing it was shocking.
Oh, yeah.
And then you have to go and tell people.
Yes.
So because of the lightness of the word, you know, even though it's not a light condition at all, did you find that people didn't take you as seriously as perhaps they should have?
Some majority of them cannot appreciate depression as a medical condition because they think that, well, it's all in your head. So why can't you just move on? But I don't think you can just move on if you find yourself not being able to get out of bed, literally, say, 2 or 3 times in a week and having to call in sick and lie about it. I think that's not right. And I think it's also one of this condition where you really don't know till it really hits you. But then again, I think if the level of awareness is being created and more people come out and actually educate themselves, I think they can identify or at the very least have a basic minimum understanding and appreciate the condition, and then they can actually see it for themselves or maybe even feel it for themselves. I think this 2 weeks period thing may not even necessarily be a correct tool, or so to speak, to actually bench for us to use it. I think as a patient, as a person who, as people, just general population and non-medical people like me, they need to be told, or at least they need to equip themselves to really have that level of awareness, because stress is everywhere, and I think one of the contributing factors is stress anyway, right?
Yep. Mm.
As a medical professional, do you feel that the word is used too lightly?
Yes, it is. It is difficult to explain to patients that, you know, what they're experiencing is actually major depression, because the word's being used so lightly, and you know they get that all confused. And I've had family members say, "Well, I get depressed myself, so what's wrong with that?" You know, I go on
you
a holiday, so why do you tell my wife to, you know, pick herself up? But it's very different. And yeah, I agree. It may be better described by some other word, but for now, I think we still need to live with the semantics.
We'll just be stuck with using the word depressed.
Yes.
Yeah, Sherman, do you also find that an issue in your practice?
I think yes. But here's the thing. If someone says that, "I think I'm depressed," and you're not sure, then you should really go and find out. Because, for example, if someone comes to an awareness that, "I think I have cancer," they go and find out straight away whether they have cancer or not. So I think depression is something that should be looked into more seriously. If you feel that there's some symptoms occurring very early on, and if you take care of it earlier on, the process is not as intense as someone who has full-blown depression. So, okay, well, we don't have a word for it, but if you're not sure, go and see someone, find out the symptoms, and try and see if you can get some help, I think.
But again, we do need to draw that very distinct line between being depressed and being sad.
Absolutely.
Yeah, because there is a distinction.
That's true. Yes, correct.
I'm speaking to Associate Professor Dr. Philip George, who is a consultant psychiatrist and addiction specialist, Sherman Ng, who is a psychotherapist, and Lin Wong, who's experienced depression firsthand. Today's World Mental Health Day, so we're discussing depression and its impact on the people who suffer from it, as well as society as a whole. We're going to take a short break for market updates, but when we return, we'll be looking at the stigma of depression on the bigger picture, BFM 89.9.
This is a download from BFM 89.9. The Business Station.
Good afternoon, I'm Lee Chui Lin, and today is World Mental Health Day 2013. So we've been discussing depression with Associate Professor Dr. Philip George, consultant psychiatrist and addiction specialist, Sherman Ng, psychotherapist, and Lin Wong, who's sharing her personal experience with depression. So how can we remove the stigma associated with depression? I mean, this is such a huge question, but I think a really important one, because just as depression is a word that's used too lightly, it's also one that, you know, it's... Lynn, you were talking about the shock you felt, you know, when you found out. And
I think the shock is more because of the perception that is being surrounded with the word depression. Mm-hmm. So the shock is because you're not educated. You don't really understand. What I know about depression is just what I read and hear about it. But of course, having gone through it and having come out of it, then it now presents a whole totally different perspective. And I think the stigma is still there. And I think Malaysians in general, they don't know that it's a medical condition. It should be viewed as a medical condition, just like any other condition, that you can get well with medication and that you can get well with the help of a psychotherapist. Like in my case, I actually not only was on medication and under the supervision of a psychiatrist, well, Dr. Philip George is my doctor, I got help from Sherman, who's spending time sitting and going through psychotherapy with me. So that was my rapid recovery, I would say. Mm. Yeah.
Yeah, we did a survey actually among university students. It wasn't a very large survey, but some of my students participated and did this survey and looked at mental health literacy. What did university students know about things like depression? Did they consider it an illness? And we had surprising results because only about 20% thought that depression was an illness, thought that depression could produce any disability, that people with depression needed treatment. And even among those who said that they needed treatment, the top on the list was actually traditional cures and religious treatment. So it shows that perhaps our community has very little knowledge about some of the most common illnesses in the world. And where do we start? I mean, I think children in school should learn what stress is, what the ill effects of not managing stress is. We're so busy trying to get the A's that we forget to teach them life skills. And, you know, that's where perhaps we need to address things.
From what I understand, depression also has a tendency to recur. What is happening with this? Is it the fact that the neural pathways are set a certain way or, you know, what's going on?
Yes. Well, with depression, again, as I mentioned earlier, we all have our, you know, threshold for stress. And so we can go through different stresses in our life and, you know, get out of it. But when we have too many or something that's too big, then we've gone beyond our threshold. It then changes neurochemicals in the brain, which sometimes don't set even after treatment. And they can put you at vulnerability to have another episode. But if we're aware of it and we take the steps that we do to try and avoid, you know, things that can precipitate another episode, then it might never happen again.
From what I understand, they often say that only people who've been through it, would really truly get depression. But how is this reflected in clinical practice? Because I'm always interested in this with doctors. I always ask them, you know, you ask patients about pain, but if you've not personally experienced the same pain, it must be difficult to gauge. And with depression, I guess the same thing applies, right? If you've not personally been through it and your understanding of it is through a textbook, how does that interfere with clinical practice, if at all?
Well, one thing is that most people who've never experienced it before will most probably come and seek treatment very late into their illness. They have no idea that it's an illness, that it's something different. If people who have experienced it, they often come early and seek treatment and seek help early.
Sherman, I understand that your practice is partly based on your own experiences with depression and anxiety. Could you share?
The short version of the story is 14 years ago, I was the chief executive of a company that I built. I was completely out of my league, very young, ambitious person that couldn't handle the stress and the challenges that the job presented itself. So I started developing symptoms of depression, anxiety, low mood, low motivation, and fearful feelings. And it culminated when I actually sold my company and when I decided to take a break, that's when I completely crashed because I kind of allowed myself to crash, I guess. And that followed with 2 years of not doing anything at all, couldn't get out of bed, panic attacks, and I had some OCD symptoms, obsessive compulsive disorder symptoms. And I couldn't work for a couple of years. I couldn't do anything for a couple of years. And I decided to... Well, I didn't decide to take time off. I couldn't do anything, to be honest. So time off was forced on myself. And I used that time to rediscover myself. I went back to study. I went back to study psychology and physiology, particularly to understand my own psychology and my own physiology, to work out how did I become from this person, as I said, who was very productive before, to this completely shattered individual. that I couldn't do anything. And and that's basically how it all took place for me. And I decided that from my experience, I would be able to come up with a solution for people, firstly to heal myself, and after 2 years, I rehabilitated and managed to come out of it and decided to study some more and get into this area of psychotherapy.
And you work with something called the Peace Process. How does it help people deal with mental and emotional stress?
The Peace Process got developed as a result of my own experience of how I took care of my own depression. And it came about from studying from a variety of modalities, from cognitive behavior therapy to mindfulness practice to positive psychology. And there were bits in there that I found very, very useful for my own healing experience. And, you know, the chemicals in our brain are such that you can actually change them if you know how to sort of practice certain techniques with yourself. So medication does a fantastic job in doing that. But for it to be sustainable, you've got to find a way to manage your own thoughts and manage your own feelings so that you can actually create these networks in your brain yourself, essentially, so that your serotonin and your oxytocin can actually fire on their own. And the process in itself, which consists of four steps, helps you to take a moment to be more aware of your mind, more aware of your feelings, so that you can generate these emotions and thoughts yourself, essentially. And the four steps are, very briefly, firstly, you've got to pause, not do anything. If you're being challenged by any situation, is you just take a moment, just take a step back and stop. And that's very hard for a lot of people because we like to fix things every time something happens. So pausing, very, very important. Number two, step two is to feel your feelings. After pausing, you've got to realize that there are some emotions that are coming up that causes you to feel a bit challenged, whether it may be anger, guilt, frustration, fear, is to get really, really comfortable with those feelings and feel them until those feelings do not present themselves in an intensity that bothers you anymore. And then step three is to think openly, not positively, is to think openly from one end to the other that everything is as it is, negative or positive, because negative things happen in our lives. We can't just be completely, just expect that positive things are going to happen to us. Mm-hmm. And lastly is to act responsibly and to follow through with your place of calmness and open-mind thinking that you can act responsibly in every situation. And those four steps, when you think about it, pause, feel, think openly, act responsibly, can be used in any situation, anywhere, anytime, and you'll be able to rewire your mind and rewire the way that you feel quite adequately.
We do have a question from a listener, Joe. Joe, I do hope you're still listening. I know you sent this in much earlier. Are there any natural brain foods that can help the brain chemicals rather than medicine?
Oh. Yeah, I mean, there's a diet that we would normally advise people who are recovering from depression. And that diet generally has to be a balanced diet, more in vegetables and fish, less in red meat, less fried food, caffeine to a minimum, to a bare minimum, and if possible, omit altogether. Light dinners, maybe a bigger lunch, and no skipping of meals. So generally, a healthy diet is essential. What we do know now is exercise is competing with antidepressants as remedy for depression. And so what we tell a lot of people is, especially in the first week of their depression, when they start treatment, that it may be difficult, but in the second week, they need to start an exercise plan, a routine.
And how important is a holistic approach? I mean, we've addressed this. We've talked a bit about the role of everybody in this room today, you know, from the psychiatrist to the patient to the psychotherapist. So overall, how would you say a holistic approach needs to be incorporated for somebody to heal?
Well, I would say it's essential. It's pivotal. I mean, I think Lynn is a, you know, true example of that she would not have got full recovery if she didn't have the opportunity to look at managing her depression in a holistic approach. But generally, I think it's essential for everyone.
No, I just want to add in to say that I think depression should be managed in a more complete manner, that you should not just rely on medication. Yes, it's really tempting. The medication did work. Mm. It's tempting to just feel that, okay, the medication is working and that's it. That would be it. Mm. But I think psychotherapy helps as well. So it has to be approached. I think the medical profession has to really look into how depression is being treated today and having to move forward, that it has to be a complete approach with like a team, a network of team, the psychiatrist as well as the psychotherapist. And of course, the patient really would want to get better. The will to get better needs to be in place.
From my perspective, we need to look at it holistically, because our health is not just about the brain or the body. Mm. It's both. You know, you can't look at the brain separated from the body. All the science shows that whatever happens in your mind affects your body. Whatever happens in your body affects your brain. By that virtue of principle, we've got to look at all aspects, mentally, emotionally, physically, spiritually. Mm. If you have a physical disability, you've got to look at how your mind is being affected by it, and vice versa. So the science says it time and time again that this is true. The problem is that we don't actually have an integrated solution yet that is readily available. And we're working towards that, which is why we're here, to advocate for that. Yeah.
And ultimately, what message would you like to leave us with on the subject of depression, you know, since it's World Mental Health Day?
Well, maybe I'll start. I think there needs to be a growing understanding and knowledge about depression as an illness. I feel really sad that even insurance companies don't think it's important to cover. Mm. And a lot of patients are burdened because they can't claim. And, you know, when costs go up to have to see a psychiatrist and then a psychotherapist, you know, then they decide that maybe I'll omit one. Mm. And that's to the detriment of their own illness. So it's an illness just like cardiac disease. I think people need to, you know, open their eyes, you know, maybe look out and see that this is real and that people can recover.
I want to call out on to the relevant stakeholders and authorities to to actually really look into how mental health, especially depression, is being treated in this country, and that it is true, as what Dr. George has actually said, it does cost money. But I've been really fortunate in the sense that my medical recovery has been well taken care of. I do understand and I do appreciate that not everyone they may not have the same opportunity as I do to have a complete team to actually lead me to my recovery. But I think all relevant parties and stakeholders really out there really need to look into ways and means to actually treat depression in a more positive way, you know.
For me, I like to deliver a hopeful message that no matter how severely depressed or challenged that anyone is struggling with this affliction, that there is a cure for it. It can be completely reversed. Mm-hmm. You just need to find a way and know how to actually engage some professionals to give you some advice and to take the process through. So if you're unsure about anything, just pick up the phone, call your doctor, call any of us here if you know how to get in contact with us, and we can give you some very practical approaches on how to deal with it. And, you know, it's bad, but it's not forever. It's something that is very temporary and, as I say, completely reversible.
I just want to add that if you know of anyone who is depressed, just send them lots of love and understanding. Just don't judge.
Thank you all for joining me today. I've been speaking to Associate Professor Dr. Philip George, Consultant Psychiatrist and Addiction Specialist, Sherman Ng, Psychotherapist, and Lynn Wong, who was very, very brave and shared her personal experience with depression with us on The Bigger Picture, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, The Business Station.